it's been a hell of a long time since I walked for 4 miles or so to get home at 3 o'clock in the morning, or slept with someone so I wouldn't have to, or found anyone who'd want to. Seems it was just accepted back then that you'd be prepared for an hour or two stroll at the end of the evening. Coming back from a school trip to see the RSC doing Henry V at Stratford-on-Avon, it was after midnight when I edged up to the front of the coach and spoke to the driver. "Can you drop me at the next roundabout?" I asked. The teacher, Mr. Pope, intervened. "Why is that then, Briar?" I explained it would mean a 3 mile walk home rather than the 4 miles or so I'd have to do were I to go all the way back to the dropping off point at the school. "No problem." So as a 14-year-old schoolboy, I walked for an hour or so beside an A road which ran through mostly rural land at 1 o'clock in the morning without being abducted by a paedophile gang or being even ever so slightly murdered. Although I understand nowadays that such gangs of kiddie fiddlers can be found at the gates of each and every school in the land. But it was simple then. It was later on that getting home got complicated. The snow started to come down heavily at about 4 in the afternoon, and by the time I got to Waterloo at 6, it was a state of chaos. Blank departure screens and a seething mass of pissed off commuters packed out the concourse. I retreated round the corner to the White Hart to wait things out. "I'll go back in an hour or two, it'll calm down by then," I thought. 2 hours later, and somehow twice as many people were now wedged together shoulder to shoulder. I jumped on the only available train, and by changing and walking and having a drink and catching a bus and having a drink and having a curry while waiting for a cab, I got home some 6 hours or so after I'd set off. "You poor thing," said the girlfriend, before her countenance took a dramatic shift. "You're drunk," she said accusingly. "Of course I'm drunk," I said. "I've had a very stressful evening." So now I'm back on Waterloo Station a few years back, Friday night, waiting for the last train. I've been to a leaving do in Smithfield and a birthday thing in Blackfriars, and it's been a long day and a big night. And I think I'll go down to the bar and have a nightcap. And down you went to this bar, down a flight of steps to the dingy, smoke-drenched Cooper's Bar. I got my G&T, large one, in a tall glass and took up a leaning post in the corner. It was rather boisterous in there, to say the least, and I weighed up the options. I had a bad feeling. I didn't like the fact that in the event of trouble, the only escape route meant climbing back up the stairs. So I slipped my tumbler of G&T into my jacket pocket and made a careful exit, heading for the platform. "I'll just wait here," I thought. "I'll have a fag and I'll wait." It being Friday night, though, last train and all that, it was equally lively on the platform, and now I had a new problem. As I sparked up a Dunhill and pulled my glass from my pocket, it occurred to me that I must be exuding at least a partial air of the old Noel Cowards. While trying desperately to look inconspicuous, I picked up a discarded newspaper, which I intended to hide behind. Except the discarded paper which presented itself wasn't one of the zillion landfill copies of the Metro. Oh no, it was a copy of the Stage. So by now I'm fully prepared to be gay-bashed to death by the local thugs. So I began trying to remove incriminating evidence by chugging back the gin and all the while imagining the reaction of colleagues. He's still in hospital, you know, in a coma. Yeah, hate crime apparently. I never knew he was gay. Well, his poor wife. Still, I always thought he was a little bit suspect.